From the Ground Up, a podcast of the Alabama Extension Home Grounds team educating you about home landscapes, gardens, and home pests.
My guest today is Hayes Jackson. He is an urban extension agent for East Central Alabama, and he is going to talk to us about the climate zones and the USDA climate map. So, Hayes, thanks for joining on the podcast.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's start out with how you got into horticulture. If I know you're a plantsman,
you've I'm got a big old plant geek.
Yeah.
And that's self-proclaimed.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It came early in life. I would eat an orange or a plum and plant the seeds even at 3 years old. So I was always interested in growing things. And and I guess my first memories go back to when we lived in Naples, Florida, and I love palm trees. And we were moved into a house, and I begged to have some palm trees. So I have a picture of me sitting in our front yard in 1970 planting two palm trees.
And,
wow. And that has carried through my whole life. I'm still planting palm trees today. And I don't know if you pulled into our office today, there's palm trees planted around the office. And yeah, I did that.
Well, I know you have a pretty extensive collection at your own house, right?
Right. I have a 9-acre garden, and I can cut the grass in about 12 minutes with a weed eater. So it's all beds and paths and plants. And I spent this past weekend moving out all my – I do hardy plants, and I've got such a varied taste. So I have a couple hundred plumeria that I shuttle into the basement and move out, and a lot of succulents and cactus. And, of course, one of my favorite things is camellias. I've got about 450 varieties or so, and I do Japanese maples, and I love broadleaf evergreens. It's just plants in general, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I know I've been a part of your webinars and things like that over the years, and I see a lot of things that you're growing that's very unusual for this part of the world. So we're in Anniston right now. And the things that you're growing in your garden, I've never seen growing in this part of the world before. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I learned at an early age, and I was fascinated with climate zone maps. And I can remember when I was about 16, I got a Wyman's Garden Encyclopedia for Christmas. And I've read that whole thing Christmas Day. And went through, and in the front cover, there was a climate zone map. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. That was my first experience. And it had most of Alabama in Zone 8 from about Gadsden south. And then north of Alabama was Zone 7. And then you're kind of the far south was Zone 9. And I was interested in, you know, why the climate changed. You know, what made it change is what would be the difference? Why somebody could grow one plant, where, you know, how far north do you have to go? So I started pushing the limits then and trying things and realized that you could utilize microclimates and you know, siding and get away with things that weren't supposed to grow here. And that became kind of my mantra with trying to grow things that other people couldn't grow or weren't used to seeing in our area.
So what are some of the things that are, I would say, the most unusual things you've got growing? That's not specific for this climate.
Right. I do a lot of, I like things that are drought tolerant, and I like pulling in a lot of, and that was really my first collection was cactus. And I remember I had about 35 species of hardy cactus growing. And I was 16 years old, and the newspaper did an article on my cactus garden. So that was one of the first things. And, you know, cactus, you don't think of Alabama as being a cactus country, but we can grow lots of not just prickly pears, but I was doing other types of true cactus and yuccas and agaves, and I still grow those things today. I've actually kind of transported a lot of my collections and things that I'm doing in at the botanical garden here, which was a program as extension agent. We tried to we had a grassroots meeting, and we wanted to have a botanical garden. So, and that's kind of happened. It's taken a while, but it's happened here now in Anniston.
So, you mentioned the climate zone map inside your book that you got as a child. Tell us a little bit about these climate zone maps and how they've changed, and how you've seen that change over the years. So, what all's involved in those?
Well, and I can remember seeing us as Zone 8, and this was in 1979, 1980, that I moved to Anniston, and I started developing my garden then. And if you remember, we had some of the worst winters in the early 80s, 81, 83, and then we had our coldest temperature ever recorded in Anniston in 1985 at -5 degrees.
Wow.
Set our all-time record low. They changed the climate zone map after that. I guess with the USDA, it's every on a 20 to 30 year average, they'll update. And mm-hmm. it's just been recently updated, which is kind of a reason why it's kind of been, in the talk among gardeners that they've kind of expanded the zones. And but if you go back into the 70s, we were Zone 8. And what I've done over the years is averaged Anniston's temperatures for all of the data, and I came up with Zone 8, 8A. Of course, they break it down, and A is the northern end and B is the southern end. But we've seen other zone maps come out. I know Southern Living had a map with upper, middle, lower, and coastal south and tropical south, and that works great. I've always thought that was a great zone map, and the fact that it goes beyond just temperature, and it talks about extremes, record highs and lows. It talks about the plants that perform best in that zone. So it really gives you a good description. Whereas my biggest complaint with the USDA map is it's basing your climate on one night a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess there's Zone 8 in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. There's Zone 8 in, Ireland. And there's Zone 8 in China. And there's Zone 8 in Alabama. So and those climates are not that similar. We grow totally different plants in some of those climates. So that became my quest, was to really, how do you define to people what you can grow? And over the years, I don't know if there's a map that could be developed. And I've seen there was an Arbor Day map. And I know the Garden Book had a wonderful, on the West Coast. I worked in Los Angeles after college. I worked for Monrovia Nurseries, and that Garden Book was wonderful. And, of course, you have such a varied climate zone map out there because of elevation and the proximity to the ocean. So, within the Los Angeles area, I mean, you go inland an hour and there's things you can't grow that would grow on the coast. And I was fascinated with that as well. And I was like, what point, I mean, does it taper off, or is it just they'll live for a while and then you get a extreme weather event? And I think that happens in a lot of the climate zones, where every year you're going to get some extremes. And we're seeing a lot of that more lately. I've noticed, I've been gardening in the same place for over 40 years, and I'm seeing trends. And we're mm-hmm. getting hotter and drier falls. That's the thing I've noticed. And,
yeah.
and earlier droughts in the spring, which is horrible because mm-hmm. You go into summer with a drought and it gets hot and you're really dry.
So we had an earlier podcast with Dr. Lee Ellenberg. He is our assistant state climatologist, and he talked a lot about the drought situations. And, we have the new drought monitor with Extension, and we're working in cooperation with them. So he talked a lot about that situation too. So if you're interested, you could go back and listen to that. It is in the archive there. Be glad to have everyone listen to that. But going back to maps, what is the one that you really rely on the most? Because I get a lot of questions for homeowners. They see this change that happened. I believe it was in December.
Right.
They're confusion.
It is. It's confusing. And I'll be honest, I don't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I see the new updated map that puts even Jefferson and Shelby County into Zone 9A. And that to me, is way overdone. And you're seeing in southern Tennessee, north of Alabama, that Zone 8's running up those like Sequatchie Valley and mm-hmm. and some of those valleys up there. And I know gardeners, I'm a big garden geek, and we plant people talk. I've got friends that garden all over the Southeast, all over the country. And when the maps change, that doesn't change a whole lot. A lot of people think, oh, I can grow this now. But I take Texas as an example, where they moved all those zones north and made Texas a warmer, on the zone map, and then we saw what happened in 2021 with their February 14th right. event, which totally blew that out of the water. Mm-hmm. So the main thing I think is that we're going to have more extremes. I'm seeing that, and even we talk about global warming. That doesn't necessarily mean we're always going to be warmer. It creates, you know, I look back into December 2018, where we got a huge snow event here in early December, and the Gulf was 7 degrees warmer than it should have been. So it creates a stronger cyclone. It pulls that cold air down, and because of the warmer Gulf, we got a extreme cold and snow event. Yeah. So, you know, we truly don't know how all this works. But if I had to recommend a zone map, I always say the USDA's it's a okay map if you're doing okay gardening. But if you're if you're really wanting to garden and grow things, I always tell people to look and see what's growing in your neighborhood.
Right.
Because even then, we have microclimates. And here in Calhoun County, we have a variation of elevation that runs from 485 feet up to over 2,100 feet. And it's amazing the different microclimates and the temperature differences you can see. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's an Arctic front where you've got cold air advection, you've got the higher elevations are exposed to that cold. And if it's a still night, you get radiational cooling, and some of these valleys will get extremely cold. And I've seen the airport 18 degrees colder than my location on a cold morning.
Wow.
So it can really vary. So to be a good horticulturist and a big old plant geek, you got to be a weather geek too.
Right.
So you really need to know those locations.
Yeah. And, this past winter, they had that huge snow all the way down into Florida, and I'm sure that's probably going to affect some of the maps in the future. You know, the next 10 or 15 years, whatever they map out. Right.
And I saw there was below zero down below I-10 in Louisiana, mm-hmm. which is typically zone 9A, even maybe close to 9B, and they were below zero in some of these locations. I think officially it was 1 degree and around Lafayette and. I saw locations. Of course, you get on. I use a Wonder Map that has a lot of local thermometers tapped in online, and you can see some variations. And of course, those aren't official readings, but I saw low single digits in the Florida Panhandle.
Wow!
So
it was kind of a, I wouldn't say once in a lifetime, but it is a pretty rare event to have snow in Mobile, even.
Mm-hmm. And that's all it takes is a once in a lifetime event to kill some plants you're pushing the limits on, or do they survive? And sometimes they do. And sometimes, I mean, if you can go 30 years and not get a zero event, a lot of times, if we're talking like palms, the Canary Island date palms or the other different types of date palms are able to recover. Now, if it hit that temperature every year, they would not be able to grow them. But it may take them an extra season to recover, and they're very vulnerable to another cold event. So that's why we say, too, a back-to-back severe winter can do a lot of damage because it takes a lot of time for those plants to recover.
Working in Gunnersville area, I have noticed, I live on top of the mountain above Gunnersville, and I notice, you know, we get snow up on top of the mountain. As you go down into Gunnersville, there's no snow. And it's really interesting, the temperature difference and the difference in weather just from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the mountain in Gunnersville. And I guess it's just because, speaking of microclimates, the lake absorbing all that heat throughout the day and then letting it off at night, that can really change. Because we'll have, like I said, we'll have snow on top of the mountain. As you come down, there is no snow down in Gunnersville.
And if you look at the USDA map, they have, you can zoom in. On the map, you'll see that Gunnersville is a little island of Zone 8A.
Yeah.
And I've seen big windmill palms growing in Gunnersville. I have friends that garden up on Sand Mountain, and they have a hard time growing those, mm-hmm. They have to be more of a little protected. And I think if you get a small palm in and it gets several mild winters and gets established, you're good to go. But it's a lot about timing of planting and luck, really, of getting some you know, good mile winters to get it established, because we know with any plant that an established plant that has more size is a little more hardy. But I find it interesting, too, that if on the USDA map, on the not the newly updated one, but they kind of moved our zones lower a little bit after we had some cooler winters. But I noticed Anniston is a little pocket of 8A, Gadsden was a pocket of 8A, and so was Gunnersville. And I began to notice that those were actually temperatures that were from actual airport report official weather stations.
Right.
So I've always wondered, did they use some kind of algorithm, or and I know it's probably tied to elevation. And then if you go down to Montgomery, which I believe, in my opinion, the Zone 8AB line kind of runs around Montgomery or Prattville, mm-hmm. and you'll start seeing some things that they'll be ahead of the season a little bit. So that elevation does make a difference, but I wonder how much of a difference does it make when they do the outputs on this map? And those are questions that I've always had.
Yeah, after talking and listening to a lot of podcasts and things about weather, because I'm a weather geek too. I love anything associated with weather. That's one of the things I always listen for, is where are these monitoring stations located? And that can make a huge difference. And the elevation, like you said, even at your home, the temperature difference between, you know, head high and on the ground can be big. So where are all these plants at? You know, especially on your annuals and your perennials, you know, they're 1 or 2 feet from the ground, can be a vast difference between, you know, where your typical weather station or your thermometer may be too.
Right. And that's why I have 8 thermometers on my property. And I have a 100-foot drop in elevation.
Wow.
So at the top of my, where my house is I grow all the tropicals and mm-hmm. the bananas and the, you know, the ginger lilies, and I moved down to the lower end of my property, and that's where I plant my peonies, and I call that my Smoky Mountain garden down in the woods. I do a lot of North Alabama wildflowers, and it gives me, it's like I have 2 different gardens, but it works, and I can drive, it can be, it's usually 2 degrees cooler down at a 100-foot drop a lot of times, and sometimes it can be more.
And that can make a huge difference, especially with fruit-bearing trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that when I talk with homeowners, especially, when they say, where do we plant our apple tree, for example, or a peach? You know, that's a classic one that can really be harmed by some of the freezes. I'm like, well, you really need to put it either on a hillside or something a little bit higher than that low, because that cold air is a lot cooler, and it's going to settle into those valleys again. This is a microclimate. Those are things you really have to pay attention to when you are planting, especially fruit-bearing trees.
Right. And I've noticed a lot of times, too, that when you have frost, like when I get up in the morning, I never have frost. Rarely I do, but at the top of my hill, my car is, you know, rarely do I have to scrape the frost off. If I do, it's very light. But as I drive down my driveway in the winter, I can see frost on the grass on the highway below. So, you know, where it reaches that dew point. So that tells you. So you really got to be observant, you know. And, and another good indicator, too, is when you get a snow. You can also see where the snow sticks around for days. You know, you've got a little, maybe a little cooler microclimate. So, and that can be caused by the shade of the house or just the slope of the terrain.
Let's flip it on the other side of that, heat maps.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the USDA has a heat map too. So how can that affect things?
Well, and I learned this early in life too. When I started, when I was a younger plant geek, I would see all these wonderful plants. There were a couple of nurseries out on the West Coast. It was a Forest Farm Nursery and Heronswood. Had these thick catalogs, and I would flip through and see all these things that were rated Zone 8 or Zone 7, and we can't grow them here. They're things that are from New Zealand or from Chile that will not take our heat. You know, and I guess we're Zone 8 for our heat map here in Anniston, and it's those. It's not the heat, it's the heat for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, you know, we may not drop below 70 for a couple of months. and these plants that are just not used to that, and our soil temperatures get high, and it causes a lot of disease issues. So I wasted a lot of money on those plants early on in life, but I could say I tried. You know, things like Eucryphias and these things that are beautiful, the fire embothrium. There's a lot of cool plants from Chile, but I've just learned to admire them from afar now.
And those are probably late. Like, let's say you can go to a garden center and you find that. I would say on the typical, you're probably not going to find that in your local garden center.
Right.
But if it was, it would probably be labeled with something that's for this area, right?
Right. And people see zone 7B, right. zone 8A on it, and you would think, oh, I can grow that. But that's not the case.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, and it goes for other things too that are more Mediterranean that need a drier situation. And, you know, we can get inches of rain in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
In the heat of the summer, and it's, you know, we get a heat index of 110, the humidity's horrible, but it and that even makes a difference. I notice on hardiness on some things where I know I grow pindo palms here. I think they're really an 8B palm, but an 8A, as long as you give them a little protection from north wind, I've got them planted here at my office, and they survive even the coldest winters we've had recently. They get a little burn, but they push back out. But having that wall helps them. But if you go out to the West Coast, pindo palms are not hardy, barely hardy in zone 9. And it's the fact that they need that summer heat to do well and to build up those sugars and to be hardy. So a lot of times plant hardiness can change according to your climate. And it goes for dry climate plants that, you know, you look at your saguaro cactus that is so iconic in the Sonoran Desert. Those can take temperatures down well in the teens in a dry climate.
Right.
But you bring them to Alabama, and I grew one in a pot for years. His name was Spike, and I was so proud. And I had him for years, and then we got a week of these torrential rains and humid weather, and Spike just did not like that at all, and he turned up his roots and was dead. So you know, a lot of it just depends. And this is what I always do. If I see a plant that I'm interested in and I want to try to grow, I look up where is it native? What is the native soil? Is it grow in limestone? Does it grow in granite? Does it grow, you know, I try to match that. And what kind of climate is it tolerant of in its native habitat? You know, does it take the extremes? And that's why we see so many, if you do an analog to our climate here in Alabama, it goes to central China. I did three trips over into around Wuhan and central China collecting plants and bringing things back. And we know they're going to do well here because the climates are so similar, but they can also do too well. That's where kudzu came from.
Right.
So, you know, I have to look at what it's doing. We need to monitor it. And so we got to be careful bringing new things, because I don't want to be responsible for the next kudzu. but I will say the kudzu here looks much better than it did in China. You know, of course, it has natural predators there, things that keep it in check. So, but look at the climate analogy. And so Japan and China, and I'm also looking at, there's a little area of southern Brazil I'd love to get to, the state of Paraná, and where things like, if you know what pineapple guava is, and it's a great plant here in central Alabama. I think you go to northern Alabama, it's a little more sensitive to the winter cold as you go up there. But where that plant occurs is probably some other species we need to be looking at. So I also look at plants that are good landscape plants, where they're native to, and what else grows amongst that plant in its native habitat. Maybe that's some things we need to be looking at.
Yeah. So what would be a great take-home message for homeowners that are listening to this, and they're trying to choose plants that are good for their landscape, or maybe they want to venture out and do some things? And you just mentioned, you know, look at where those climates are. Is there any other things you might add?
I would say, one, be an adventurous gardener. If there's something you like, look into it and try to grow it. And if you like cactus, or if you like palm trees, or if you want to grow peonies, I know we're a little far south for peonies, but there's heat-tolerant peonies. There's a lot of information out there. Remember, there's always exceptions in nature. And I go back to the peonies. Festiva Maxima is probably one of the best peonies for heat tolerance. And it's really the only one I see growing around here. And I've tried several. But if there's something you want to go try it, do a little research. Also, be observant on your property of microclimates and match those areas. And one thing I've always discovered, if a plant did not do well in my garden, the one thing I always looked at is my soil pH is 4.8.
Oh, wow.
So it's really, really acidic. Yeah. So I've always, and I go back to growing holly fern. I would see holly ferns when I was younger growing around here that were 3 feet by 3 feet. Mm-hmm. And I noticed they were always up next to the foundation. And I thought, well, they like that protected. But what I eventually learned is they like that concrete. They need that lime. That's a fern that needs lime. So look at those growing conditions and match that plant, but also talk with other gardeners, communicate with what other people have had success with. And we have the internet now. We didn't have it when I was, you know, the developing gardener. So there's groups on hardy palms. There's groups on southern peonies. There's, you know, another thing I grow is desert roses, which is a tough thing to grow in Alabama. You know, you can get too wet. We get too cold in the winter, but you learn how to store them. Same with plumeria. You know, it's a tropical plant. But there, we've got a plumeria group in Alabama that people that are growing here, you can store them in a closet over the winter. So if there's something you want to grow, give it a try. And just do the research, and I guess that's what we're here for, too, with extension. You know, I'm going to tell you to get a soil test, know what your soil
absolutely
is, and we can send you in the right direction. So that's, and I'm always happy to share my experiences on growing some of these things.
Well, Hayes, thank you for joining us today. It's been really insightful. Again, you're such a great plantsman. You know so much about plants. You're a wealth of knowledge. And if you have any questions, you can always reach out to your local extension agent. They'll be glad to answer your questions. And if they can't get it, they'll find somebody who can. So we appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time.
From the Ground Up is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.